The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Sunnik Journal with Dr. Tom Sunnik. Dr. Tomislav Sunnik is an author and translator, as well as a former professor and Croatian diplomat. Visit his website for interviews, books, essays, and more at tomsunnik.info. And now here's your host, Tom Sunnik.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning, ladies and gentlemen, for Croatia. This is your host, Tom Sunnik, or Tomislav Sunnik, or Dr. Tom Sunnik, for some of you who prefer academic titles. And I'm very, very pleased to have a very special guest tonight, and this is Miss Anne Morrison. Anne, thanks for being with me. Thanks for being on my show, and I'm particularly pleased to have you here all the more, as I have been dealing with the topic of the German plight after the Second World War, and I certainly want to delve into it much more with you. Now, before we start with that, and this is the substance of my show, I'd like to ask you, could you introduce yourself a little bit? Could you tell to my audience who you are, what your background is? And then, of course, I'll start asking you questions about your motivation for doing this formidable project. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes, I'm Anne Morrison, and I returned to college to receive a second degree, and in the process came upon an opportunity to do a documentary and decided to do this on the ethnic German cleansing that took place after World War II.
Mm-hmm. And where do you study? Which college do you go to, Anne? Where are you at, actually?
St. Louis Community College, Merrimack.
Uh-huh.
In St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. And about your former background, could you tell us a few words?
I am married with three children, and I am a jazzercise instructor. I had an associate's degree in interior design and decided after my children became old enough to return to school to get a teaching degree in history. Besides that, I'm one of those typical taxi moms who drives around to every after-school event you can think of and sits on boards, and that's me.
Well, thank you. Congratulations for your kids. I really appreciate that. And in fact, I'm very pleased that you're also involved with this topic, which I personally, not just on the quote-unquote official, I've been involved for quite some time, so to speak, ever since I was born. And I'm really fascinated with what you're doing, all the more, as I said earlier, I've had a couple of very prominent German-Americans, or should I say American-Germans, on my show, who are basically the escapees, or who are the survivors of those massive ethnic cleansings that were inflicted by the Allies in the wake of the Second World War. So let me ask you, I hope this is not a provocative question, what prompted you to get involved with this quote-unquote the German question? Why was it so interesting for you? Was it in line with your school syllabus, or was it just a private decision on your part?
Oh, this had nothing to do with what was going on at school. The documentary started in an Honors English Composition 2 class where we are required to do a service learning project that helps the community and the academic world. The reason I came up with the documentary is because we belong to the German Cultural Society, and I had heard these stories for years, not realizing what they were. I knew nothing about the ethnic cleansing that took place. And as time went by, I started listening a little closer, and then I started reading books. And when the assignment was given to us, we had to come in with an idea that was my idea. And when I presented it, the professor and my classmates, they didn't know what it was. So then I had to explain to them and prove to them that it really happened. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed, along with four other classmates, three people who had survived the ethnic cleansing. School ended, but I kept going.
Excellent.
And one of the people I contacted was Alfred de Zayas. I had read his book, and I had questions for him, so I emailed his website. I emailed him through his website, and he was wonderful. He contacted me, and we went back and forth for months, and he was directing me to resources, books, possible people to contact, and as I went along, it got bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where the school called me back and asked if I would be interested in continuing the documentary, and they would let me use the facilities, but I would do it as an independent study. And then I, every time I thought of another idea for the documentary, like we needed photographs taken, I said, well, why don't we pull the photography students in and they can get credit for it? Or we needed music composed. So I said, well, what about contacting the director of the music department? But besides that, it has grown to be a worldwide project, I guess is the best way to put it.
Oh, that's excellent. And let me ask you a few questions. You mentioned a while ago St. Louis. I understand there must be some a pretty strong German American-German community there. Am I correct?
Yes. It has, I believe the number is there are approximately 20% of the Germans who fled, who came to the United States, came to St. Louis. So we have a very large survivors community within St. Louis.
And on a personal level, are you of German background? Morrison is rather like an English name, but I was just wondering if you don't mind. Are you of German? Do you have somebody in your family who is of German ancestry?
My husband, I am Polish, and
I grew up
in the Polish American Society and did the Polish dancing and Polish weddings, Polish food, Polish everything. When I got married, my husband didn't know anything about his background, and I thought that was very sad because I was raised in an ethnic background. So when my children became old enough, they started going to language lessons, taking German on Saturday mornings, which is, I guess, hosted. It's run by the German Cultural Society. And the more we got into it, the more we enjoyed it, and we met some friends. So now we dance with the German groups, and we're pretty much a part of it.
Oh,
yes. Well, no, I'm Polish. He's German.
Oh, that's fantastic. Let me ask you, of course, this, given the fact that this is a very large-scale project that you're dealing with, and I know it from my own sources, from my own experience, because I'm quite often in touch with ethnic Germans, be it here in Croatia, or even the survivors, or rather the expelled Germans from Hungary and Romania who now live in Bavaria or down even in California. You wouldn't believe that they're in Australia, a few of them. But I assume that you're also, are you fluent in German, or some of the people that you meet, do they still speak German at those different German clubs and societies?
I do not speak German at all. I can say Prost. That's an important word.
Yes. But you do celebrate Oktoberfest though, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Nice.
Everybody speaks German. Everybody. I work in the kitchen when we put the Maifest together or the Strassenfest, and they all speak German. I understand more than I think people realize.
Well, that's good.
But so I can't speak it.
Next time when I fly over to St. Louis, I'll check your grammar and your syntax very well. It's a beautiful language, yes. You mentioned the name of Alfred Zayas, and I guess you will agree with me, and I need to underline that name to my audience, to my dear listeners and friends, that Alfred Zayas, Dr. Alfred Zayas, is a top-notch scholar and also a legal scholar. He was also involved to some extent when Yugoslavia fell apart, when it was just about to fall apart. He was actually, I don't misquote me, but I know that he did some work for the United Nations as well. But I know him, in fact, even 30 years ago, when I was a grad student back in California, when I was doing my master's thesis on the dissidents in Titoist Yugoslavia, I came across his name, and then afterwards I became familiar with a large number of his books, and most of his books have been translated. So dear listeners, if you want to know more on a very PC, on objective level about the plight of ethnic Germans, or Germans for that matter, civilian Germans, after the Second World War, not during the war, but after the Second World War, you should read Alfred Zayas, Zayas, and please do look up at his website. But I'm sure Anne can tell us more about him. Did you have a chance to talk to him personally, Anne?
Yes.
On the phone?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. He was my godson through this whole thing, because in the beginning, and when I say beginning, the whole project started in January of last year. And I believe I contacted him in March. Mm-hmm. And he never hesitated. I emailed him some questions. He emailed me right back. And we went back and forth for weeks, and it was all about the ethnic cleansing. There was no questions about, why are you bothering me? I always get the impression when you get to that level, you get very aloof, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he never did. And then he had a speaking engagement in the States, and he said, we can talk on the phone. I will be here at this time. So we talked about the project, and he gave me some more insight to some more topics, or I should say points of interest.
Mm-hmm.
That should be in the documentary, and we discussed where to find those, and I don't know if I'd really be as far along as I am without him, not just because of the knowledge he gave me, but the support.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned, we spoke a while ago about the German-American community in St. Louis, but I'm sure you've had a chance, and you certainly will have a chance, to talk more face-to-face with some of those survivors who came after the Second World War, those civilians, or kids at that time, who must have grown up. Did you ever have a chance to talk with some of them, what was really going on a graphic level to them, what happened to their families in, let's say, 50 or 51, let's say, in what was in Poland or in Czechoslovakia, in Yugoslavia?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I've heard stories that just
mind-boggling, huh?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe the people have survived this. You hear about so many horrible things that happened, but these people were so strong. They came to the United States or many other places, and they were very productive citizens. They raised families, had wonderful careers, good friendships. But the horror they went through at such a young age, it would be a good psychology study. I really don't know how they did it.
Mm-hmm. And let me just come back to this first point we started with on a more on organizational level. I understand your project involves also a big conference that will be held in St. Louis in February next year, but I also understand from the synopsis that I received from you that you're preparing basically a documentary, a film, so to speak. Could you give me some, could you enlighten my audience on it a little bit?
Yes, the documentary is a full-length film that at this point we have 17 survivors being interviewed.
Are they from St. Louis or just generally from the United States of America?
From eight states in the United States.
Okay.
So no, they're not all from St. Louis. And it includes the Sudetendeutsch, the Donau-Schwaben, and the East Prussian. Mm-hmm. These are the people who lived it. I honestly have sat back and let them tell the story. My job was to put the film in order so people could follow the timeline and all the events that happened through 1944 until 1948. We also have photographs and maps and reenactments. And I think that it is going to be the first time that multi-generations can sit and watch this and finally, first of all, realize it happened, but then kind of, sort of, understand it. I don't think anybody will truly ever understand what these people went through, but they might be able to empathize with them a little
bit. I'm very glad to hear that. As I said, for a variety of reasons, I certainly would also be pleased to hook you up with some people in Canada. I'm sure you may be familiar with Mrs. Anita Pare. She's actually a Donau-Schwab, and she's a good colleague of mine as well. She's a very fine and very sophisticated lady. And she was actually a couple of years, I don't know, when she was five or six, when she had to leave this disaster here and what turned afterwards into Yugoslavia. But on this organizational academic level, have you had any chance to try also to dig into the Congressional Library? I'm sure you can find things over there, believe it or not, you won't be able to find in Europe sometimes, that what you can find in the States.
I have, unfortunately, time-wise, I have not been able to take advantage of it like I've wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the information I have received has been people who have come forward to say, I have this document, or I have a copy of this. I have tried to get an original copy, I guess you would say an original copy, a copy of the Postum Conference and the Yalta Conference with no luck. I have had to make a copy of a copy.
Oh, I see.
But I do have, I am able to back myself up on the dates and everything that happened.
I certainly will make sure, since this is our first encounter, and I'm very pleased and almost touched with what you're doing, and I'll tell you afterwards what I think about this myself, because this is also part of my personal drama. But I certainly would be pleased if you would stay persistent, because this is a very long-term project, and it certainly requires time. But I certainly will make sure to hook you up with some people who are more or less serious. I know the guy who is actually the chief of the German American Club Society, very prominent people. They're all born Americans, and I'm sure you know also what happened to with the German civilians during the Second World War in Crystal City in Texas. And I guess I certainly want to have your take on it now, because let me ask you, we'll come to that in a second. How do you actually encompass this project? I understand you can't do it alone, after all. I mean, it's a very demanding. Is somebody helping you? Is somebody pitching in? Are some co-students or some of your professors helping you and at least guiding you a little bit through it? Or
that's interesting that you said I can't do it alone, because I did for months. I guess I can give myself a little credit for being organized, and I can give my family a lot of credit for supporting and doing dishes and laundry and all the household things that need to be done. I pretty much work from 6 in the morning till about 9 at night, and we've changed the dining room into my office. Up until, I believe, the end of September, I did it on my own, and then the school gave me a person, Professor Scott Darrow, who has been a guide for me. He is the professor of mass communications at Merrimack, and I don't know anything about editing or film producing, so he came in and he has guided me through the whole process. And then students who are studying, for instance, Emily Curry is studying film. She is my line producer. And she does an independent study, and she does the line producing, and she helps herself, and she helps me at the same time. So now there are 10 departments at Merrimack working with me, and we have a core group of 5 people.
Are those folks, are they students, are they professors, and who are those 5 people?
The 5 people, one is Scott Darrow, Professor Darrow. He's the professor in the group, and then myself, Emily Curry, Sarah Marino, and Adam Growich.
Are they all in humanities, or do they, what do they teach, and what do they major in, if I may ask?
Emily is majoring in film. Sarah is in English, and Adam in PR work. And he's doing residency. That's not right. What is the word for
go ahead. What's you're doing fine.
That when you
go ahead.
It's not residency, but it's
a resident scholar.
You have to do it. No, you know, he's resident like he's shadowing me. He's
well, your mentor, you should say, or somebody like
you could say that. You could say that. I can't really think of the proper word, but that's what he's going into. So for him,
internship. Thank you. Okay, this is somebody else. Thanks. I'm something.
This is his internship. Yes.
Internship. Right. Yes.
And I know.
So I understand this is a pretty cohesive group that is quite focused on this project. I assume you are not just doing that for fun, because you are committed. Am I right?
Yes.
So when do you think this movie first? When do you think this visual, this video will come out? Do you think it might be out?
The private screening is going to be February 26th, and the first public screening will be February 27th at the Merrimack Theater.
I hope to be there at the time. I hope to see you by that time, because I'd like to see it myself, because this is a very hot topic. Let me ask you also, have you encountered any, I don't want to say hostility, but any ignorance, or for that matter, any snubbing on the part of some circles at your college, on the part of some communities, or some special interest groups in St. Louis as far as this concept is concerned, as far as this project is concerned?
Oh, yes.
I guess we don't have to be explicit, but I guess we know very well who we are targeting, who is actually behind. And I certainly, let me just put it bluntly, do you think some leftists or some left-leaning or whatever scholars may have been a little bit opposed to this this project, or am I just taking a wild guess?
I don't think they're opposed to it as much as they just really don't think it happened. I think a lot of people don't think it happened. And then there are those people who survived it who want to forget it. And
have you ever thought, I'm sure you have thought about the ramifications. One doesn't have to have a very high IQ and to be an academic citizen. But you understand those points about different victimologies, because this is the prime reason I'm having you here on the air. because we are discussing about something terrible that happened after the Second World War, when the rules of engagement were quite different from the military rules of engagement, and this happened massively on the large scale to millions and millions and millions of German civilians. And yet, for a variety of reasons, not just in the United States of America, but also here in Europe, for some reasons, we don't pipe up, we don't talk up much about this. I guess this is an obvious thing that I've said, but have it ever occurred to you why those ramifications are here? What are the trappings behind? You don't have to be explicit. We can just, you know, talk in a very scholarly fashion. But as you said very well, some people just don't give a damn because they think it didn't happen.
Well, I think that this is my opinion. From what I've heard, one of the things that people don't want to talk about is what happened after the war, if it has anything to do with something negative.
Excellent. We'll stop right here. We'll continue. Now this is getting very, very good. Thank you, Anne. I will be right back to your listeners, and I'm very extremely pleased to have Anne Morrison on my show. Thank you. Don't go away.
We'll be right back with the Sunik Journal. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
A coordinated series of attacks struck Baghdad Tuesday, killing more than 120 people and wounding hundreds of others. It's the worst wave of violence to strike the Iraqi capital in more than a month. The labor ministry, a court complex, and the finance ministry. Insurgents hit three government buildings in five attacks, showing their ability to strike high-profile targets. The massive bloodshed is another embarrassment to Iraqi forces as they expand their role in frontline security and U.S. forces plan their withdrawal. Iraqi lawmakers say militants are trying to discredit the pro-Western government. The blasts come as Iraqi officials set a March 7th date for parliamentary elections. The White House condemned the attacks. There has yet to be any claim of responsibility. Ian Kepley, The Associated Press.
And now let's return to the Sunik Journal, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Yes, welcome back to my show, dear folks. I'm very pleased, as I said earlier, to have a special guest in Morrison on my show, and she is doing a fascinating project that involves also some other scholars and people, hopefully also me. And Anne, we just left off, and could you just tell me a little bit, we're talking about quote-unquote hostility or ignorance, but was there any explicit hostility on the part of some quote-unquote left-leaning scholars in some departments, particularly in sociology or psychology or something? Or did you, what was, if I may just ask, you don't have to mention the name, what did they tell you, those people? It doesn't exist, or what?
No, the only thing that really came to my... Okay, how should I say this? There was just one person who is a professor who stated that there was no good reason to put so much emphasis on this project above any other project because it's... no big deal. Okay. That was really from the school, from the professors. Other than that, there really hasn't been much, at least that I've been told. Most of the people have been very supportive, and every time somebody new hears about this, they're just in disbelief.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I'm asking you that is because I know most schools, not just in the States, but also in Europe, I'm talking about higher education, of course, are literally run by Marxist and Frankfurt School scholars and people who, for a variety of reasons, just want to harp on their version of the truth and who are certainly not very receptive to those type of victimologists that we've been discussing in our show. And I'm certain that I don't want to, of course, we don't want to put labels on those professors, but I certainly would have expected more public backing of your support for your project, because I think it's not just a fascinating project. I guess it's a civil and it's humane, it's ethical, and I guess it's a necessity. And I'm extremely pleased that you're doing that. And let me ask you now, to what extent, guys, have you come with that project? Are you also, you said a while ago that you have a conference end of February. Have you already lined up some speakers? Have you given some publicity to it? Is the word spreading around?
It is beginning now. The first press release will go out Monday.
Uh-huh.
And the school, as well as the German societies throughout the country and in fact the world, are writing their own stories. So the publicity is starting. It's not what you would think of. It's not like a Hollywood program. The trailers aren't going out on TV every 30 minutes, but it's more word of mouth than anything, and the word of mouth has been excellent.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the word of mouth, I think, has been better than any print about
it. How about, Anne, let me ask you, how about the funding? Because after all, we are talking about the big project with many speakers, end of February, and of course this documentary. This costs quite a bit of money. Have you received some money from different donors, or have you asked for some money? I presume that every good college in the United States of America should be able to open up the purse and finance this project.
No. I've had no financial backing. I've had no grants. I've not asked the school for anything. I have done this, I don't want to say for free, because our phone bill has gotten bigger, but I've done this on my own. There, anything that I have, any interview, any place I've gone, it has been free.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really shocked, because I had a documentarist speak to me, and she was trying to get all my insight as to how I got funding, and I kept saying, I didn't get funding. I just did it.
Well, did you, sorry to ask you that, but did you ask in the first place? You got to be a little bit more aggressive as far as I'm concerned. And I certainly know quite a few of German clubs from down in Anaheim, down in southern LA, to up in Toronto. And I'm sure if you address those people properly in a good lingo, I'm sure they would be able to, they would be fascinated to support you and to give some money. And as a matter of fact, as I said a while ago, once we advertise this show, rest assured that I will send this little ad that Steve will help me and Mike with this ad. I will send it out to at least 500 people, including quite a few of my fellow ethnic Germans who are scared literally from Sydney all the way to Santiago de Chile. Yeah.
I am very uncomfortable asking for money.
Oh, you're just like me.
I know. Everybody, I've had a lot of people say exactly what you've just said. You know, this kind of project, they would back 100%. You should not feel uncomfortable asking. And I'm honestly afraid of repercussions. To be indebted to someone makes me very anxious. And I think that the story needs to be told, not necessarily to make money, but just to put some insight on a piece of history that should have been there all along.
Well, you're a great and brave woman, and I mean it, although I've never met you, and because you're dealing with a very humane project. But at the same time, pardon me pontificating, I will tell you, Anne, you're not doing that for yourself. It's certainly, every good project requires some financial background. And I'm certain that in the long run, this will have good repercussions, particularly on many, many Germans. And we're talking about hundreds and thousands of American Germans who, for a variety of reasons, have to keep their mouth shut because they're scared, because they don't want to talk about this. And, you know, I know some other issues, and we can address them later on. It's certainly, you would, one way or another, you could be of great help to them. And I'm certain that if you kindly write to them and ask them for some financial support, we're not talking about megabucks. We're just talking about moral support. This is basically what you need. Because after all, believe it or not, I'm not saying this, we're not that close, but it certainly will have a positive repercussions here in Croatia, for that matter, because out of here, about 500,000 Germans were kicked out, thrown out of communist Yugoslavia in the period of 45 to 1950. And of course, their descendants, their relatives live scattered all around the world. And those folks are not allowed even to claim their households, and in fact, they're treated like second-hand citizens. The reason I'm telling you that this is, after all, your show, not mine, because this is a big problem now in the European Union, whether the Germans, who are quite a few of them, whose ancestors were born in Sudetenland, whether they should now in the European Union, which is basically like a borderless Europe, there is just one jurisdiction, whether they should have access to their property. And of course, this Czech government is strongly opposed to it. So you can see this is a highly emotional, very political issue.
Oh, yes. I know that I spoke to a professor in history at Merrimack. His name is Professor Dirk Voss, and he was absolutely shocked that I'm doing this. Born and raised in Germany, and his parents and his grandparents went through the ethnic cleansing, and he said, you are opening a very large can of worms. He said, you do realize that, don't you? And I said, yes, I do. He said, when he was in school, the subject wasn't even allowed to be talked about. You just did not talk about
the land of brave and their land of free.
Yes, exactly.
Like in communist Yugoslavia, we're never supposed to talk about the victims of communism. And we, of course, we had to regurgitate our mouth 24 hours on the victims of fascism, but we were never supposed to talk about the victims inflicted by the Allies. Well, let me specifically, I'm still interested in some segments of the movie and how you're actually going to put this together, if you don't mind. This is a video, right? I understand. Pardon my ignorance. I don't know very much about movies, and I'm not a big
DVD.
Fan of... Okay. So this is going to be a DVD. And what's the length of it? Like 1 hour and 30 minutes? Are you going to make it a little bit longer? Okay, so this is
going to be 90 minutes.
Okay, and I would be able to purchase it someplace, I assume, right?
This
DVD. Excellent. And how, in terms of the content, what is exactly? I'm sure you get this original clips. And where did you get those original clips from? I mean, how do you collect them?
The original clips I got are just of the people giving the interviews, telling their stories. The photographs I have were donated to me by many, many people from all over the world. There are very few photographs that exist. When the people were chased out, fled, put in camps, sent to Ukraine, Russia, they didn't have cameras. You know, there are really not a whole lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make sure that the pictures I had were, in fact, pictures of that and not of any other situation that may have existed.
Let me just clarify two important points. We're talking about the pictures first, and then we're talking about the individuals. I'm sure our listeners would like to know what is, something about the background of the of those people you interviewed? Are, so I presume they're legitimate, they're people with some knowledge, and who themselves went to this hellhole of ethnic cleansing. Mostly Germans, I understand that. Can you tell me something about that? Are there any prominent Germans, American Germans among them, or just people you encountered per chance?
Well, I think they're all prominent American Germans. The people that are in it are people who survived the camps. Mm-hmm. And they all have their, I guess, within their own community, they all have their name. I don't know exactly how to put what I'm trying to say, but like John Haas, he came from Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. He was in a camp for 3 years, a death camp for 3 years, and then he was moved to a slave labor camp for another 3 years. So 6 years later, he was able to get to the United States, and he got married and had three children, and now he owns a beef ranch in Edwardsville, Missouri. It's people like that. It's everyday people who survive these things. And then I have a historian, Dr. Voss.
Okay.
And I have the Dona Schwaben historian, Joseph Simon.
Have you talked to them? Let me ask you openly, did you have a chance to talk to Anita Pare from Canada? She knows quite a bit, in fact. She was recently here.
Yes, she has helped me quite a bit. She has sent out my information about the project, and she has sent me people to contact and articles to read and books to look up. And that was interesting in itself, just the books, because that's what started me, is reading. I love to read. And I ended up with a book list right now of over 200 books on a subject that people say doesn't exist. How can there be 200 books written about something that never happened?
That's a standard question in modern historiography. We could talk about this. Let me ask you about the pictures. These are not motion pictures that you have obtained, just pictures of, let's say, couples or... how can I say that? Go ahead.
What I have are pictures of the towns, the villages that were taken over. And I have pictures of the people, the work they did, and it will make sense when you see the film. For instance, Adam Martini would say that his father was a woodworker, and I have a picture of the family in their woodworking shop. It explains. It shows a background of where these people came from. If somebody talks about Yarik, I have a picture of... the county courthouse, the town square, but then we have also maps that explains where the lines were, where the Sudetendeutsch came from, the area the Dona Schwaben lived in. I have some pictures that aren't so pretty, mass graves and people, dead people in a wagon, things like that. And then we have reenactments where a story was told and we were able to reenact the situation.
Pardon me for telling you this, but I certainly would suggest you again, Anne, keep in touch with Dr. Zayas. The Zayas is a very respected guy all over the world and even in the United Nations. And I'm what I'm going to tell you is the following. There are documents, original documents, videos, if you wish, of document of the motion pictures, especially from 1944 until 1945, collected by the German, if you wish, National Socialist authorities back then. In 1945, things changed. But they, in fact, when, of course, we're not going to go on to recent history, but just to give you an idea, in 1945, late 1945, you know, as Berlin in December was heavily bombed, actually it was turned into ruin and so on, like most European towns, but the German authorities were still doing the impeccable job of filming that. So those films, those documents can be found, they can be traced, and I'm sure with some good courage and with your bravery, I'm sure you could locate them. Of course, I don't want to get into this scenario and everything, how you're going to do this documentary, but I'm sure it could give an additional verve to your documentary if you could illustrate that with some motion pictures.
I'm trying.
You can definitely, I'll give you some names. You can just do it on a very legitimate and legal basis. Of course, we don't want to get into some conspiracy theories.
No.
Of course, there are many, many documents that, for instance, the American authorities might not be very happy to give you and to release, especially as far as Dwight Eisenhower's treatment of the German soldiers was concerned. We're talking about 700,000 people. There's a book by James Buck. It's a French, it's a German, I'm sorry, Canadian French scholar who wrote
yes.
the book. And he wrote about this. And unfortunately, many American citizens don't even realize how many of them were starved. We're talking after the Second War, not during the war. They were literally starved in the fields and along the Rhine. But many, many things that happened prior to that, we're talking about prior to the 8th of May, 45, before the armistice was signed, were actually extremely well documented by crumbling German authorities. And those things, quote-unquote, as long as they stay politically correct, don't get me wrong, they can be traced, they can be found. So again, try the American Congressional Library, talk to some of the friends, talk to especially to some Germans, and I will make sure, because I'm personally also involved with it very, very much, and I will certainly, if you don't mind, I'll send you some emails, some very serious people and professors of German background who can possibly give you some help. The reason I'm telling you that is that when you add the real video, you know, it gives more credibility. And
yes.
We don't want to be too explicit then.
Let
me put it explicitly. I'm not asking Dr. Zayas for any technical features, but I'm sure he can provide you with some inside stuff that very few people are familiar with.
I don't know how much information he has given me that has not been public information so far. Many, many people have given me things that I have never seen, and neither have anyone who knows about this have seen. But I don't know if it's necessarily been hidden, or if just the fact that the topic has been covered up for so long that so many things got pushed down to the bottom of the pile that people forget they ever existed. Mm-hmm. They were probably always there. And it's not like the things that have been brought to my attention have been big secrets. They've just been ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow me?
Sure, I do follow. Well, do you think, let me ask you a provocative question. Do you think somebody may be, quote-unquote, behind, who on a higher level, we are talking about high level, who might be interested in preventing this sad story from being aired, because it would automatically overshadow the other sad story as well. So what do you think about this? Because I'm sure it may have crossed your mind.
I believe that nobody wants to be viewed as a perpetrator.
Uh-huh.
It's much, much easier for anyone to be viewed as a victim.
Okay.
Because you receive sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the bad guy that goes in and does something mean to someone else,
mm-hmm.
people, it just immediately form an opinion. And it's very hard to get rid of that opinion. But if you have been a victim of somebody's hatred or meanness, the public seems to lean towards you a little bit. Usually. Mm-hmm. Not always. So
don't we see it on a daily basis all over
yes.
the Middle East?
Yeah, so I don't think that I don't think anybody wants to be labeled as somebody who them or their ancestors were the reason thousands of people were chased out of somewhere, or thousands of people were tortured, or thousands of people died. Nobody wants that. So, of course, there's going to be people at the top saying, oh, no, this didn't happen. Because nobody wants to be the bad guy.
I'm glad that you're doing with this, that you're dealing with this issue, because it's a very sensitive, it's very explosive, it's a very emotional issue. And just for our listeners, you may possibly sometimes feel, well, we are ignorant in America, we don't hear about this, but believe it or not, there's the same climate, the same intellectual climate, specifically in Germany. And I know it again firsthand because I'm next door to Germany and I have lots of German friends. And it's bad, it's actually grotesque, so to say, when you see them constantly talk about mea culpa, what they did to different minorities during the Second War, the Germans, whatever. But you never hear about what was actually, what happened to them, what was inflicted to them on a far larger scale. Now, let me ask you, Anne, in terms, you mentioned in your synopsis something about this big conference that will take place in late February. Again, we'll come, and this is not a provocative question. Who is actually funding this conference, and who is being invited? I've seen some very prominent names, including Brigitte Neary, who I once spoke with, Professor Brigitte Neary.
There are a number of people who I have invited to come with the understanding that this is to be done on their behalf. The school, as far as funding people to come in, I have not asked. The school has been wonderful in letting me use their equipment to make the video, and they are hosting a press conference and speaking engagement that you're speaking of. There are going to be speakers from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon on Friday. The private screening begins at 6 with the reception, and then performance by dance group, the screening itself at 7. So they're letting me use the theater. They're hosting the reception. They're taking care of the invitations and the advertising, and I can't say that the school hasn't done anything, because they have. They have done a lot. Just the fact that they listened to me and believed that there was really a good story there. And I must give a lot of credit to Dr. Pam Garvey, because she was the professor who said, tell me about it. And there were many professors before then who just blew me off.
Thank you, Anne. That's really beautiful, and you are really a very courageous and very brave woman. And rest assured, give me a chance, and I'll fly at my own expense to the meeting, and I certainly would like to give a lecture on the plight of ethnic Germans in post-communist Yugoslavia and what they went through. And I really wish you all the best, and I certainly will try to help you out as much as I can, and I'm very, very happy to have you on board. And let's keep in touch. And thank you very much. And thank you, dear listeners. And goodbye until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Sunik Journal with Dr. Tom Sunik will return next Tuesday from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.